This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast. Everything that Richard, Tom and myself have been up to this morning. And it's been quite a busy one because we had not one, but two purchasing managers indices dropping, as the kids would say, during the show for UAE and for Saudi, taking a look at the health of the private sector economy. So we've been speaking to Daniel Richards, who is a senior economist at Emirates NBD, to put the reports in context. How are we doing on the ground? The UAE, meanwhile, has made it onto the top 10 list when it comes to the world's most connected countries, but quite frankly, I think not high enough. We're in at number 8. Amadou Diallo is the CEO for DHL's global forwarding business for the Middle East and Africa. He's been telling us why we are where we are and what might happen next. Plus, we lost Richard Dean in the second half of this show. He took off to the gold souk, gold at around $2,300 an ounce. What does it mean for actually buying bracelets and stuff? And one of the other big talkers of the day was the KHDA giving the green light to schools to raise fees if they hit certain metrics. Again, double dose of Dan this morning, our economist on call. He's been talking about what it could mean for inflation. We are on Data Watch this morning, morning, because we are 10 minutes away from the release of the Purchasing Managers Index for the UAE. What does that do? That tells us what's happening really in the private sector. Technically, the bits of the private sector that aren't involved in the oil industry, so everything else, but it's a good indicator of what's happening in the economy in general.
Yeah, it's closely watched by business leaders, to the point that listening to Tom's interview yesterday with Stephen Anderson from PwC, now he was here to talk about their economic report, which they do, which was great. But Tom, even Stephen mentioned the PMI, didn't he?
Yeah, said that it was good across the region. That was part of their, they call it the PwC Market Watch. It's their economy market watch. They look at economies across the GCC. Robust and resilient was the two buzzwords that were doing the rounds in that report. They were looking at oil prices rising, but non-oil sector doing very well indeed. New trade corridors being developed as well to keep up with demand internationally in light of geopolitical tensions, and green financing as well. Those are the three sort of main key takeaways from the report itself. Let's hear from Stephen Anderson now, if we can. He's one of the bosses, basically, partner, Middle East strategy leader for PwC Middle East. Here he is talking about the UAE PMI data.
The region's digitising, decarbonising, localising, privatising and modernising, and that's paying dividends. We're going to see very strong non-oil growth. We're predicting 3.9% to 4% next year. PMI data is very strong as well. We're way above the 50 mark, which is this kind of break-even, if you like, for confidence, both in the UAE and Saudi. I guess the other big news in the region, we've kind of tamed inflation. Certainly we've seen transport costs coming down. We are seeing rents ticking up, but generally speaking, inflation is hovering around the 2%. Mark, that gives us increasing confidence as we look forward.
So those thoughts of Stephen Anderson of PwC. That's your amuse-bouche. That's the little taster, if you like, the hors d'oeuvre ahead of the main serving, which comes out in, 3 minutes' time. No, got my timings wrong there.
Mickey's big hand.
Oh, I'm looking at the digital one. I can't do it. 8 minutes.
Yeah, okay. Give or take. 7.5. Technically, that's the PMI
data. We keep talking about it, it'd go down, won't it?
I know, so. Yeah.
But Stephen also mentioned their inflation, didn't he? And that ties in with another of our big stories today, which is inflation from education. Because you've been watching the KHDA directives about how much schools can raise their fees and what it means for the economy.
Yeah, we've got a double dose of Dan this morning. He is our economist on call. He is in 6 minutes and 50 seconds, going to be looking at the 45. UAE PMI data with the rest of us and then chatting to Richard about it. We're giving him a very short window to get his head around it. But before that, we chatted to him about the fact that KHDA has said that schools that hit certain markers when it comes to their performance and the recent inspections will be able to raise their fees for the next academic year. We wanted to know how that fitted into the inflationary basket. How important was education in the general scheme of the cost of living and the numbers that we put on the cost of living. So the CPI basket and the inflationary numbers here. We're going to hear from Dan now, a good 6.5 minutes before he starts looking at that PMI data. This is Dan talking about what effect those school fee rises, potential, because schools do of course get to choose, could have on the cost of living.
The announcement from the KHTA that some private schools will be able to raise fees by 5.2% next year means that education will remain inflationary. And that's especially when you compare it to a pandemic period when rates were static for 3 years. Education makes up a pretty sizable component of a CPI basket, 8.2% of the total. And that's actually a fourth largest component behind housing and utilities, food and beverages, and transport. All that being said, though, the amount a school can increase its fees does depend somewhat on its rating change. And it's from a baseline of 2.6%. And also, these figures are actually a little lower than the 6% maximum 3% baseline that we saw the previous year. So that pace of inflation in education will actually likely slow from a present level of around 3.5%, helping the headline rate soften as well.
Appreciate David's message on this one. He's texted us on 4001. You can also WhatsApp on 0487 1550. He says school fees have been released from fixed controls by the KHDA. That's what we were talking about in studio a little earlier on. Whilst next year fees have not been released for our kids' school, I can tell by the re-enrollment fees sent this week that it will probably be somewhere between 7 to 8% increase. Naturally, we will pay as we like the school and its staff. However, it is concerning for many parents as a lot of employers no longer offer schooling as they continue to keep payroll costs as close to pandemic levels as possible. Don't blame the schools, people. Blame the private sector. Thanks, David.
Yeah, we've already got one statement out from one major schools player. In fact, it came out last night. GEMS Education issuing a statement from their CEO, Dino Varki, saying that they'd noticed the We've noted the KHDA's announcement. They say that the decision to increase school fees for the academic year 24 to 25, depending on the KHDA approval for each school, empowers us to invest further in our teachers, curriculum provision and facilities, etc., etc. They say that they will be informing families in due course about their school's fee structure for the coming academic year. So a little bit of watch that space there. Serena Kelly, good morning.
Morning, guys.
I know you guys are having a look at what's happening with the school fees this morning. I expect it to feature quite highly on the agenda as well.
Yes. So just to give you the background, because I know you've been looking into it as you've just been discussing, Dubai's Knowledge and Human Development Authority have set that education cost index, which gives guidance to private schools on their fee increases. So for the next academic year, 2024-25, they've set the ECI at 2.6%, which will now allow some schools to raise fees by up to 5.2%. So that is because the rate which schools can adjust their fees is tied to each school's most recent inspection rating. I know it's something that Tom addressed before. So schools that maintain the same rating can increase fees by up to 2.6%. Then those that improved are eligible to add up to double the index. So according to the KHDA, those schools that improve from weak to acceptable or from acceptable to good will be able to opt for double the index. But it's important to note that the increases must be approved by the KHDA first. And obviously it goes without saying that schools that dropped in the annual ratings, obviously they are not eligible to apply for any fee increase. But if you need more details, it is on the Air and News Centre website.
Right. Last few days of Ramadan, you've been talking charity.
Yes. So charity or zakat, still very much at the forefront of the holy month. The UAE has exceeded its target of raising 1 billion dirhams for the Mother's Endowment campaign. So this is the initiative that was launched just before the holy month began celebrating mothers. So you can make a donation in your mum's name. And all donations are targeting education, so helping millions around the world and perhaps communities that may not have access to education. So exceeding targets in less than 3 weeks of its launch. And with that, just a reminder from Al Amin Services. This is the portal where citizens, residents, anyone living in the country can seek advice or support or report any concerns when it comes to your safety and security. And as this is seen as a time of giving, there will be those looking to take advantage of that. So Al Amin has been asking people in Dubai not to encourage begging, which tends to appear in all forms during Ramadan. We've had reports of people saying they need money for petrol as they can't get home. So they use empathy. But of course, it is against the law. We mentioned this a week or so ago that the UAE public prosecution highlighted those fines. Anyone caught begging could be jailed for up to 3 months and or pay a fine of at least 5,000 dirhams. So instead, direct your kindness through donations through those authorised channels. You can head to alameen.gov.ae for more details. You've also got the Mother's Endowment campaign and Dubai Cares running that Gaza in Our Hearts campaign as well.
Yeah, we spoke to one cybersecurity expert who said that the trying to take advantage of the sort of general feeling of like you say, goodwill and charity also extends into cyberspace, that they see quite a mammoth spike in attempted, you know, phishing attacks, etc., on people, hoping that people will have their guard down, basically, during the holy month, and warning people to be particularly vigilant on that as well.
Yep. So the best advice is just go through those official portals.
Serena Kelly, thank you very much.
More details on the Air News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Silly question before you ask serious questions about the PMI. So you know our sort of strive to find a purchasing manager?
Yes.
And we're yet to find one, or yet to get one to. Is a purchasing manager a procurement manager, or are they separate roles?
Yes. Purchasing manager is a general catch-all term for people who spend the money. Yeah. Procurement manager.
Okay, cool. So they're the ones that send you the emails going, are you sure you want to charge that for that event? Or are you sure you want to, you sure you can't come down a little bit? They're looking for the best deal. Is that right?
I guess so.
I'm looking at the Robert Walters definition. A purchasing manager, also known as a purchasing director or a supply manager, heads a team responsible for procuring goods and services for resale or company use. They seek the best available quality for the lowest price. They evaluate suppliers, negotiate contracts, and review product quality. I've had a few run-ins with a few in my time.
Well, they have been speaking, and the message they have given is, to quote analyst Rosie, PMI score of 56.9 for the UAE for last month. That data out within the past few minutes. Dan Richards is standing by, senior economist Emirates NBD. Morning, Dan.
Hi, good morning.
It's only a two-page report. You've had a quick take. What is your quick take?
Quick take is still pretty good. So it did come down a little bit on the headline, 56.9 down from 57.1. But, you know, that's still well above the neutral 50 level, still indicative of an economy that is firing all cylinders. And just to put it in comparison, everyone got excited earlier in the week about the Chinese PMI numbers having come in just above 50. For the UAE, they've been consistently in those mid-50 levels for several years now. So really reflecting what is going in the non-oil private sector, which is a pretty healthy outlook.
Well, there's good news and bad news in the report. Let's look at the good news first of all. What they call outstanding orders are at one of the highest levels in the past 15 years. They call, the economist David Owen at S&P says the economic picture is rosy. That's the glass half full take on it. How do you read it?
Yeah, so there are strong new order growth, and that has contributed to backlogs of work. Should be noted, though, less positively, some of that is to do with disruptions to activity caused by the Red Sea shipping incidents that are causing ships to go the long way around Africa, and that has led to delays in supplies, and that has led or contributed to that backlogs of work. So part of it is a positive story, part of it not so positive, but we expect that those obstacles should be ironed out. Companies are adjusting to that, continue to adjust. So we'd expect that those backlogs of work would start to come down over the coming months.
Yeah, highest in 15 years, those backlogs of work. The other negative, if I can call it that S&P highlights, is margins. This is what they say. Margins appeared to worsen as increased competition contributed to the strongest drop in output prices in nearly 4 years.
Yeah, so this is a trend we've really seen in the UAE for quite some time now, even when input prices are going up. So that is the cost that businesses are paying for raw materials. We've already seen oil prices heading up this year. We have these shipping cost disruptions as well, and also staff costs. The cost of hiring workforce is going up. But at the same time, in order to remain competitive in this growth dynamic market, firms are still cutting the prices they charge consumers. So that is good for us, but not necessarily good for businesses. For the time being, they can manage to do this, given that there is growth in general activity and the aggregate means they're still better off. But if that growth starts to slow, then maybe businesses will have to start raising their prices in order to maintain their margins somewhat better.
What did we learn about employment here in the UAE? I'm reading the last line of the report. It says firms raised their employment numbers at a pace above the series trend for the second straight month. That's only 2 months. Can we read too much into that, Dan?
I think the employment subcomponent of the PMI has certainly been far more positive in recent readings than it was a year or two ago, when quite frequently, even as work was going up and new orders were coming in, firms were trying to do more with less. They weren't hiring. That trend does seem to have changed. There does seem to be a more substantial rise in employment month after month, and long may it continue.
Finally, you've got the business activity optimism index, again, at a four-year high.
Yeah, so I think we expect rates to start coming down. Inflation looks like it will be somewhat softer. The global slowdown is happening, but the expectation is, you know, perhaps through the end of the year, that won't be quite as detrimental to growth here in the UAE. So things are generally looking up, especially with the higher oil prices, which does tend to boost optimism often here in the region. Then I think we can understand why firms are optimistic.
Dan, I don't know if you've had a chance to have a look at the Saudi Arabia report yet. I mean, these things literally came out 10 minutes ago. The headline I'm looking at is business conditions strengthen rapidly in Saudi Arabia in March. Going to bring in Brandy Scott. Brandy, you've been looking at this one, I think, have you?
I've got it up in front of me. So let's have a look at the headlines that have come out from Saudi. As you say, business conditions are strengthening rapidly. We're coming in at 57, a sharp rise in the pace of new order volumes and softening input costs. How are you looking at it, Dan?
Yeah, so it's a similar story to what we've seen in the UAE from Saudi Arabia. The readings have been consistently well above the 50 level, and that is reflective of what is going on there in terms of the heavy investment into developing these new sectors. And when you see the respondents to the survey that gets written up every month, you often see them citing strong new project work. New projects are always ongoing, and that is supporting the growth in the private sector there.
Yeah, so I was curious about the Saudi PMIs. I mean, if I look at the main indicators of this, the purchasing growth is strong, the new business activity, which is the biggie, is on the up, the cost pressures are coming down, that's great. Employment as well, they're saying it's, you know, additional staff hiring. We had a blip about 2 months or so ago in the Saudi PMIs, unexpected, but they seem to have got back on track since then. How are you taking that?
Yeah, it was a similar story in January for both Saudi Arabia and the UAE. In fact, there was a marked slowdown at the start of the year. It led to some expectations, perhaps, that growth wouldn't be as strong as previously anticipated. But that has turned around quite markedly over the last 2 months, really rebounding forcefully in February and again in March. So expectations as it stands is that the non-oil growth here will continue to be a pretty strong driver of a headline expansion. Oil sector, sure, probably not really driving growth again this year, given oil production curbs remain in play, and we'll wait to see what comes out of OPEC later today, probably nothing very much. But the non-oil private sectors in the GCC are really firing on all cylinders.
Daniel Richards, Senior Economist, Emirates NBD. That report out within the past 15 minutes. Really appreciate you going through it quickly and giving us your analysis of that.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Oh, here we are about to look in more detail at one of our top stories this morning. The UAE rising up the ranks in DHL's index of the world's most connected countries. And we are joined this morning for an in-person connection with the DHL Global Forwarding Regional CEO for some Middle East and Africa, Amadou Diallo. Amadou, it's lovely to see you. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, the good news. The UAE has seen the biggest jump in terms of this index, so in terms of its connectedness, in the last 20-odd years. Out of the 181 countries that you look at, what does that actually mean in practice? What have we done?
Well, in practice, multiple things have happened in the UAE. So, first of all, you know, we are happy to be leading logistics provider here in the UAE, as we have been in Singapore and many different places. From the analysis that we have conducted, which went through over 9 million points of data, You know, the UAE has ranked top because of the peace and security that exists in the country, because of all the infrastructure that has been developed, the domestic distribution with the rail network that has been built up, plus the rapid development of e-commerce.
Okay, because when I heard that DHL was measuring connectedness, I assumed that it was literally any way you'd get a parcel from A to B. So the rail, the flight links particularly. And I thought, how are you number 8? But you look at a lot more than that, don't you?
Yes, we look at more than that because, you know, when you consider global trade, you know, there are multiple drivers. One of them is like the free access for people. For them to be able to trade. Second, and Dubai was, the UAE was open for trade for a long time during the COVID and post-COVID time, more than any other country. Secondly, with the closure of China, multiple activities that used to take place in China moved to Dubai, so which multiplied the number of activities. And lastly, the infrastructure development has never stopped. So, you know, now Dubai and the UAE are more connected to most of the Middle East and African countries and have become a global hub.
Okay, so number 8. In the top 10, 6 above us, 7 above us even, what would move us up further? What boxes still need to be ticked there?
Well, so, you know, the number one country is actually Singapore, followed by the Netherlands and then Ireland. And I think, you know, if you look at the past of Dubai, it has been actually growing much faster than all the other countries in the last 20 years by more than 11% on average. And that is multiplying because the UAE is now also starting to invest in infrastructure in multiple countries. You can see that in the UK, you can see that in Angola, in Senegal, in Mozambique, in many different places. Secondly, you know, you have the implementation of very large multinationals in terms of e-commerce, because now it's becoming also an e-commerce hub with the DCC. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that is being developed in the UAE that will place it actually to be rapidly growing. I predicted 5 years ago that they will catch up with Singapore.
How much change is there generally in this index year to year?
Well, you know, so if you look at the overall index, you will see that over 38 countries went down. All the other countries actually improved. For instance, if you take the MENA region, so Qatar is now also ranked number 10 because they're applying similar policies as the UAE. However, the UAE has, you know, established a long-term policy that has been and established their reputation on the globe for a long while. So I think it will be very difficult for Qatar to catch up with the UAE, but it's good that they're sort of heading in. And you see similar trends happening now from the Saudi Arabian market. So I think that this market is poised to become a global platform.
I was interested to see in your report that despite a lot of talk that we've been doing recently about nearshoring and friendshoring and the interruptions to supply chains and COVID, meaning people were looking to do things, if not at home, then close to home, disruption to shipping, etc. You show that international trade flows are actually getting longer and less regionalized. Why is that?
Well, so it is showing regionalization only in the US, in the American market. When you look at all the other markets, you see that that internationalization is trending up, and actually it only touches 25%, because you know you have from 0 to 100%, we're already at 25%. So there's still a lot of growth opportunity. Now, if you consider the 100 million people living in Egypt, 100 million people living in Ethiopia, young people, well-educated, there's 200 million living in Nigeria, and then being very strongly connected to the UAE and to the Gulf countries, so that opportunity of growth is going to go up because China will be importing more, America will keep on importing more, Europe will keep on importing more, and I think that we'll have much more manufacturing platform based in our market.
Amadou Diallo is the regional CEO, so the Middle East and Africa, for Global Forwarding at DHL. We appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you on behalf of the Lions and Falcons.
Coming in to talk to us about more maybe than just freight forwarding.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast,
where we are taking a look at that $2,300 an ounce price for gold. Good as gold. Trade you all my money for your gold.
Worship you, cause honey, you're like gold. Yep, gold prices are renewing their all-time highs near that $2,290 mark in early trade today. That despite the geopolitical tensions around the world, holding near the new record high of $2,288. but continuing to hold strong this morning. Why? Number of reasons, but one man who's taken it upon himself to go and find out firsthand, take one for the team and make his way to one of the centres of gold trade here in the region is Richard Dean. Deany, where are you?
I am down in Deira in the gold suit, Tom. I was thinking, what does $2,300 an ounce mean for gold? What does it mean down in the gold suit? So I thought I'd come and have a look and find out. So I left the studio about an hour ago and here I am.
And what have you found thus far at the moment? First and foremost, is the traffic all right?
Traffic was fine. I was thinking about you because I was listening to your traffic report on the way down Media City to Deira in about 28 minutes. And I was parked, no worries at all. Look, it's early days yet. They're opening. They're just, the shutters are coming up at some of the stores now. But the real action will start about 10 o'clock this morning. I'm speaking to jewellers later, but I just had a conversation with Andrew Naylor from the World Gold Council. And he says quite candidly, yeah, high prices are going to put off some shoppers this Eid al-Fitr, but not all.
A lot of people looking to why the price is going so high at the moment. Obviously, we keep talking about geopolitical tensions being one of those that are driving people towards safe haven gold, as has usually been the tag. Also questions about the data coming out of the US, obviously the jobs data a little later on. Could that trigger the trigger a correction on the price?
Yeah, that's the irony of gold, isn't it? That it's the traders in Wall Street and Singapore who set the price in their office blocks with their computers. But it's down here in the gold suit where the physical trade happens. And it is its geopolitical tensions. It's continued inflation globally. That's keeping the gold price high. And here in the gold, they are price takers. You know, if you go to most shops in Dubai, the traders get to set the price. They can decide what they sell their coats for or their mobile phones for. But here, gold's a commodity, so these guys are price takers. They've just got to work with what they have.
You often look at gold gains against dollar dips as well, and yet the dollar's been strong over the last couple of weeks. So it's an interesting moment, isn't it, where we've got strong dollar again, dollar bouncing back from its lows of yesterday's trade against the gold. Both seem to be doing quite well in tandem at the moment.
Yeah, there was this theory a while ago that the gold and the dollar move in opposite directions. But to be honest, it's a very weak correlation at best. They can both be high and they are pretty strong at the moment. And that whole divergence of the two. I remember talking to Jeff Rhodes about this 15 years ago on the Business Breakfast. And he said, nah, Richard, it doesn't really happen that gold and the dollar move in opposite directions. They quite often move together. And he's been proved right over the near 20-year history of the Business Breakfast. But it's true, to echo the point, that it's the investment banks, it's the traders in the high-rise glass-fronted office blocks that set the price, not the traders here in the gold suit. And there's a lot of gold here. Andrew Naylor of the World Gold Council told me that here in the gold suit in Deira itself, you've got about 50 tons. To put that in context, that's about 10% of the entire gold holdings of the Bank of England in the United Kingdom, one of the world's biggest economies. But this is not where the price is set.
Has the gold souk changed? And by that, I mean the fact that we've all been here for quite some time. We've all lived under the subtitle of Dubai, the City of Gold as well. I mean, other trading hubs have been set up, the Gold and Diamond Park, obviously DMCC as well. But does the gold souk still hold its allure?
Well, no one's tried to sell me a handbag or a watch yet with a fake logo. So maybe that's changed. But this place still has a huge amount of resonance. There's just a legacy here of all these traders. And as I mentioned, all that physical gold is here. And that does still matter. Yeah, of course, there's gold trade in Abu Dhabi and Sharjah in other parts of Dubai as well. You look at Dubai Gold and Diamond Park, there's a lot of manufacture there. And that's been a success as well. DMCC as well, particularly for diamonds, but also gold. But take nothing away from it. The gold souk is here. And in fact, I'm going to go and see Chandu Saroya in a few minutes' time, have a chat with him about gold. And he's in what's called the new extension of the gold souk. So the gold souk is expanding, not shrinking at the moment. And that tells you that there is still demand for people traipsing down here and walking away with either bangles or bullion.
And is this I mean, we often talk about gold and the spike in gold trade around holiday seasons. Given the fact that Eid is just around the corner, coming towards the end of Ramadan, would that be a gain time for the gold traders in the souk?
It's funny. Andrew told me that not necessarily. Because he said a lot of people leave over Eid, and a lot of the buyers here, he says, Emiratis are huge buyers of gold, but a lot of them tend to leave over Eid al-Fitr. So when you look at the spikes in the gold activity here, it's things like the Dubai Shopping Festival is now a thing on the gold calendar. It's the Indian wedding season. So Eid al-Fitr isn't traditionally a spike in terms of gold demand. Diwali, the Indian Festival of Light, is one of those spikes, but busy nevertheless here in the gold. So, Ramadan, Eid al-Fitr is very much a time of gift giving.
And last but not least, I mean, obviously, we always talk about gold with good reason as well, with its fated history as well. But does that also set the standard for other precious metals? Lest we forget spot silver, platinum as well. I mean, are all in tandem? If one does well, do others do well, or can they be varied?
Well, the platinum and palladium are slightly different because they are industrial metals as well as jewellery metals. So they're driven as much by demand for catalytic converters as they are for people getting married or buying something for an anniversary. But certainly this is something of an everything rally is what the analysts are calling it. So, silver's been lifted as well. Gold is at a record price at the moment. That there is demand for these physical assets. And Brandy's been talking about oil this morning as well. There's demand for oil. The geopolitical tensions that are partly lifting the oil price are partly lifting the gold price as well. So there are bits of this story that overlap, but of course some bits are unique to gold and some bits are unique to the Dubai Gold Souk.
Can't thank you enough, Dini, for taking one for the team, heading on down to the souk at the moment. I know it's early doors, shutters coming up down there. Once those shutters come up, there are all sorts of pieces that will catch the eye. But Brandy, as you can see from the TV pictures as well, the only thing catching the eye at the moment down at the Gold Souk is Richard's jacket. Everyone that has walked past you, Dini, has given it the once over, that's for sure.
I tell you what, to stand out with your bling in the gold suit is quite the achievement. So I'll take that one.
Richard Dean, live from the gold souk. The OG gold souk, that is, down there in Dubai. Is it Bur Dubai? Correct? Bur Dubai, isn't it? The gold souk. No, it's Deeside, isn't it?
Deeside,
isn't it? Yeah, Dean got the... Oh, why have I forgotten the name of a boat across the... What's the boats across the creek?
Abra.
You got the Abra across.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to DubaiEye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.